Welcome to the Color and Ceramics Podcast. I'm Bob Acton, host of the show, and we are here to celebrate ceramic art around the world. We interview a range of ceramic artists, from highly experienced and well-celebrated ceramicists to emerging artists. While, of course, we're interested in color and surface design, we end up talking with artists about a range of their experiences. You can listen to the podcast anywhere you find podcasts, such as Spotify, iTunes, or other systems. Today on the show is Mie Kim, a London-based ceramic artist whose practice flows between two connected worlds: whale-inspired forms that speak to wisdom, resilience, and long journeys, and pieces that fuse Korean motifs and Hangul with Western design. Born in South Korea, Mie spent years in Los Angeles as an animator and visual effects artist before discovering ceramics at Glendale College. Since moving to London in 2020, she's picked up major recognition, winning the 2024 London Potters Established Maker Award, plus both Judges' Choice and People's Choice, and she's a selected member of the Craft Potters Association. Her work is represented in the UK, Japan, and the US. Mie, we are very excited to have you here on the Color and Ceramics Podcast. So welcome aboard today.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This is great.
Yes, you're most welcome. We really love your work. And of course, the work I do is really focused on animals. And so, of course, your whales work kind of speaks to my heart a little bit. We are excited. Now, you're in London today, are you?
Yes. It's very hot today.
Very hot today, yes. Well, we are in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, which is in the prairies right near the mountains in Canada. And of course, the joke we always talk about with the weather is how darn cold it gets in the winter. So we appreciate any sunshine and the summer days. Hey, Mie, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about your journey in art. I know that you have had a career in Los Angeles. You started in Korea and did some film work and animation work in Los Angeles, then got addicted to clay, as I call it, and then ended up doing some work in the United States, and now you're in the UK. So I wonder if you could tell people a bit about your journey and that sort of thing.
Okay. So I grew up in Korea, and when I was young, I thought I was going to be a comic book artist. That was my dream when I was a kid. And then I think when I watch Little Mermaid is the point when I become like really falling in love with animation. And so I was planning to go to US and study animation. And I ended up went there in my early 20s to study, but ended up kind of working. And I did animation, and then it kind of moved on to visual effects for other films and stuff. So I worked for about 20 years. So I hope this kind of inspired other people who's in their creative journey later in their life, that I didn't touch clay till my middle 40s. I never actually, like, besides when I was in elementary school, like touching those air-dry clay, I never actually touched any clay. I think closest experience I ever had with any pottery is like watching the scene from the movie Ghost. That's about it. Yeah. So working in animation, my husband also worked in the same field. We met each other in a studio, and we both were working about 60, 70 hours a week when we finished project and stuff. So we were little bit too like burnt out, so to speak, and so I we kind of made a plan for me to not retire, obviously, but maybe change my career to kind of accommodate each other a little bit. So I actually went to culinary school, hoping to open a restaurant. I know this is like a long story to Clay, but so after finishing my culinary school, I was planning to have a little cafe and planning some menus and things. And I had a little time in my hand, and I wanted to make some plates for my dishes, and that's how I ended up at the pottery class. But then that was it. I just loved it. And then I kind of dropped that part of the culinary side of it, and I just went in. It was just kind of like a taking one class after another. But then I ended up kind of like getting into a whole program. And about 2 years later, I finished a little program. And then from there, I just kind of started my own little changing of career, so to speak.
So tell us a little bit about your studio that you work in.
Oh, you mean the animation studio?
No, your
Oh,
play
sorry.
studio.
Oh, so when I finished my program, I opened a little studio of myself in garage, my garage at home in LA, full set up studio with a kiln and everything, and I was going to make a like a functional homewares. And during my program, I actually exposed some. I had some experience of doing Raku firing, so I had a Raku kiln as well. So I did some Raku at home, and that's what I was going to do. And then COVID happened, and then my husband had to took a job. It's like a between one shutdown to another from California to London, because my husband still works in animation. So there was a huge shutdown in California, and then London was opening, and then he got a job over here. So we both ended up moving here during COVID time. So we thought we were just going to be here for a year and a half, but we've been here for 5 years now. So looks like we're gonna be here for a while. But I don't have a studio of my own yet, because it's kind of I'm in circumstances of like I'm not sure how long I'm gonna be here, so I don't want to go through like a setting up and everything. But we are actually on process of getting our residency here as well. So I'm in between, like kind of end up having communal studio, maybe looking for a studio, like not a studio space of my own. That's kind of hard to get in London. how pricey everything is here. So maybe a little bit of one of those communal studio, but you have your own kiln and you have own space and sort of things. Right now, I'm actually working out of a small, tiny, I mean, it is big studio, but like my space is like a little shelves, and then someone else is kind of like I don't have a full control of my own kiln. That's kind of little bit of my downside at the moment, but I mean, I'm making it work.
Very
So.
good. Very good. Now tell us a little bit about your work. So this is an audio only podcast. So that
Okay.
means people can only listen and
Yeah.
they have to imagine what your work is
Yeah.
like until they go to your website or Instagram and find out what the kind of work you do. Could you
Yeah.
talk a little bit about the work itself and just what your ideas are behind the work and what you're trying to get across as an artist?
Yeah. It's kind of interesting how I ended up kind of doing what I'm doing at the moment, because when I had a huge garage studio, it was a I was working a lot of what is like making a lot of like a functional ware. I could make a set of a plate, set of a cups, and just pile it up and sell it whenever I can. And I didn't even start on my website. I thought I was just going to sell it at a fair, or I was selling a little bit at like an Etsy and things. So it's like, I mean, it wasn't hobby, but it wasn't really like an art ceramic per se. But moving to London and working a small tiny like my own small space, and also even apartment is not big as my house in LA. So by force, I mean, in a way, like a pleasant force that I have to actually work like less pieces. But then I'm like, yeah, maybe I should really decorate them more, and then go from there. And that's how I started decorating a lot more, like elaborate, painting pieces, doing all sort of other decorative techniques on it, and things. So right now I have a like. I mean, you mentioned whales. I have those whales that I make, which it's some of them a little bit look like my animated character a little bit, but yeah, I do carving and painting and stuff like that, and other decoration on it. So
Cool. So tell us, so you got a couple of themes in your work, I understand. One is the whale. So let's talk a bit about that, but also sort of the junction between Korean work and your heritage and the Western world. And so tell us a little bit about, let's talk about the whales to start with. What, how
okay.
did the, how did that emerge in your work? What does that represent?
Always by like in a way by location, isn't it? Because like, I mean, we lived in LA for like 30 years, and then our plan was retiring in Hawaii, and we used to go there like almost twice a year. And then in the winter, those humpback whales come down there to have a babies, and you can spot them everywhere, right? And so that was kind of my inspiration in a way. Like, I mean, and another way of a little bit business forward thinking too. I'm like, oh, like I thought I would be moving there pretty early. So, what can I make to sell as a local Hawaiian artist, and this and that, and then whale came to mind. And then it's kind of funny, like I like making those whole what is it for, like lidded jaw with a like a drawing all the way to the top, and then cut in the middle to make a lid, and then put whatever object that I put it on top as a handle. And one day I was like, oh, I had a tall jaw. I just put a maybe tail on it. I thought it would be kind of cool. So that's how the whole thing started. And then the couple I made, somebody at the studio liked them, and I sold them before I even fired them. So this is not bad design. So that's how I started. And then now we're not even sure right now that we're actually moving to Hawaii, but there you go. But then it is I'm actually sending them out to the Coastal Gallery in England. So there you go. Whales everywhere, you really
Whales are
think about
everywhere,
it. So,
absolutely. Now, how do
yeah.
you finish those whales? You've got an interesting finish on the lidded jars with the whale tails. Tell us a little bit about your finish.
Yeah, so I started with a very basic. So I carved them like a sort of a like a Mishima or Sangam, I don't know if you're aware of. So inlay outlines, and with a wax. So I just get a really dark line on it, and then when I after first fire, I will paint them with underglaze, and then just put a clear glaze on top. That was my use all my first pieces, but now I'm started really developing more glazes. So like using try to use more of a like a little and I think what I'm trying to get at is like a with a whale, and then kind of sort of a more environmental awareness talk about it. So it's like a it's it has a I'm still forming this idea of a whole thing, and while forming the actual visually forming forming my end piece too, because my wheels, I don't know if like people who follow me for a long time, they will know like it's been changed a lot. And this is still ongoing process of changing. So my where I'm going is more of a it's like a fragment of a ocean like an ocean bottom type of thing on whales. It's I don't know if that even makes sense, but that's I might you ask me 1 year from now, I might talk something totally different, but that's where I'm going. But it is definitely my whales definitely is a working progress still. But I'm having a lot of fun with it because it's like that's one thing I do like because from my boxes, which is very rigid, very little bit of tedious work in a way, and from that to whale, it always gives like this completely opposite way of a freedom, which I enjoy too. So
So your boxes, it sounds like, feel a little tighter to you. And whereas the whales have more of a kind of that organic feel to it, which opens things up for you. And I understand the whole creative process that you over time are going to change. Maybe there are some artists who keep doing the same thing over and over again. But I think lots of artists also do a body of work or a series of work and then modify it a little bit, and that over time their work changes as they explore new ideas.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So you've got these, so tell us a little bit about your boxes, because they're very beautiful and colorful, and so tell us a bit about your boxes.
Thank you. So boxes, I started making boxes while I was doing some rectifying, and then rectifying that's when where I start doing the tape and using decal because you can expose the black smoke, the black surface, right? So that's how I started, and then that's kind of come to these pieces as well, using lots of tape work, decorative, little decals and stencil using. And so I think main thing is what I do is like I use this box as a canvas. And divided section, and the section each section I will decorate in different way. I mean, mostly glaze, or some glaze will be like moving more than others to kind of create a little bit of one side of being a little bit of more chaos than the other, and but still in the same frame of a kind of. I don't know how to call it, like a blade, like looks is solid, but it has a different section to, does that make sense? But it's
Yeah,
a
for sure.
yeah, so that's what I'm trying to do. And then one thing I use a lot is definitely the kind of graphite. How are you? Doing this, like I even wrote down some, but now I'm like, I can't even find them. It's just getting a little bit. So I'm using, I did write this somewhere. So I'm using this. Oh yeah. So I'm using a lot of Korean motifs and patterns, and then. So the Korean language is called Hangul. They're a lot more than other written language. They're a lot more like a, how you put it, little more angle. There is a lot more graphic sort of beauty in it. It has a lot of angle to it, which suit really well with the box type of form. And then the writing itself is I actually modify them to make it kind of fit to my pieces too. So like some people who like you can actually read it, but even for Korean, you will take a couple seconds go, oh, what is it? Oh, that's what it says. That it's not Yeah, it's not, I'm not trying to make it harder to read, but just to make it look pretty. That's what I do. But it does take a little time to read a little bit.
Yeah, for the brain to figure out what it is that you're
And
saying. Now tell us, what is your message? What are the messages that you put on the boxes?
I'm trying to find that it's not too many words I use, but I'm trying to find the words that it's actually sounds kind of pretty, but also look pretty, but then also it has some meaning in it. I mean, I think that's pretty important. So one I use is actually title of this poetry book by this famous modern poet of Korea that every Korean knows. Like we have to study his poetry when we study, but it's not even it's not actually a poem. It's a book about this his poetry book that is really famous. But what it means is really pretty, and then the sounds really pretty too. So I just use that, and then a couple other things is like a very basic like a, it says. There's one and one it says Adam Town, which is meaning just true beauty, and then but it sounds kind of pretty and it looks pretty to the way written. So and then another one is I it was very related to clay. I just said clay on it, but it's but the Korean clay which is called hook, but it's also like it has a many meaning. It's not just clay. It can be clay, it can be soil, it can be earth. So it's kind of that the multiple meaning sounds just sort of a meaningful and pretty as well. So that's one
And
word
that
on
really does fit with clay. Really, it comes out of
it.
the earth. It turns into something clay and pretty. Yes, absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah, in Korean, I don't think they do actually have a very separate. I think they use another words for like a clay, but it's not really for like it's you know how every language has so like you can't really exactly translate to one to just one, right? So
Very good. Now, I am guessing that your animation background has quite an influence on your surface design when you do your work. Am I right? How does that work for you?
yeah, I mean, definitely. I think I can. I mean, I don't spend too much time drawing, but I think it's definitely showing on my like for whales, like my especially my beginning pieces. I mean, it's a hand, it's carving, but it's actually those lines drawing, right? You, I mean, you don't wear those diamond tools that you have to. You only have a one chance.
That's
Like,
right. That's right. Yeah.
yeah, it's the kind I have to fix. And once in a while, people watch me do it in my studio and they're like, how do you do it? I mean, I think that's coming from because I actually studied as a traditional animator. So I used to draw with the flipping papers and stuff like that too. So yeah, I'm that old. Yeah, no one's doing that anymore, right? So yeah, definitely. I think those like whales, and then also like I mean, I do actually do some inlay carving on my boxes, which is just very simple drawing, but definitely has you know that my that background is showing.
Now, can you describe your process of cutting through the clay? Do you work quickly? Like, are you making quick lines with the tool? Are you going very slowly to make sure that it fits with the sort of the size and the space that you want? How do you actually work with the tools on the clay?
Oh, I think whales. I definitely because it's whales is kind of challenging. I mean, I've been made so many pieces now, but still, it is a little challenge because I can't really make exact same curves and same pieces by drawing those pieces. So whenever I try to fit those whale into it, all the sizes different. Their curve is different. So I do put a little. I use this cheap watercolor painting, and then kind of paint the basic line first, and then I go from there. But like other like a little bamboo drawings and stuff like that on boxes, I just kind of go at it. It's, I think I've done enough pieces now. Just And sometimes it comes out like eh, but sometimes but I like the spontaneous of a quick drawing look too. So
It gives
sometimes
it a sense of being alive in a way.
yeah,
Yes.
I've tried to actually be even more lighter, but sometimes I think it's my personality. I get a little bit, although I feel like I'm doing, but my drawing kind of shows like it's very little bit more, not loosened as much as I want it to be.
Well, you have lots of followers and you do some great work and have your work out there. So lots of people love your technique. That's obvious.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
Now,
you.
one of the things that we talk about on this podcast, of course, is surface, and we've been chatting a bit about that and color. How do you manage the relationship between form, because your boxes are quite different than the whales, as an example, or some of your vases. How do you manage the relationship between form and color or surface design?
I think that's something I don't purposely think about it all the time, but I think it kind of like year by year. You should have seen my first box was like little square thing. That was it, and then cut in the middle. I mean, I always had that little round thing, so you won't move. That's something I started from right from the get-go. But I think it's just something. Even in the like of it, like one of those pieces, actually, I remember coming up with that idea by going to some crab museum in Korea, and I thought one of those old Korean cabinets' legs were really interesting, but I didn't really purposely. Oh, I'm gonna get inspired by this, so I went there to. Oh, I need inspiration today. Just like one day, you walk around and you see, and also. Even my Korean writing too, I actually found that in some cafe in Korea too. So it's like one of those things like you don't look for it, but sometimes it just right on your face. And then you're like, oh, I'm gonna change that to this. So it's like you start with a basic thing, and then every few months or so, you just something just come to you. And sometimes it could be just a just scroll through Instagram and some ideas. I mean, I could get some ideas from someone's work, but it's not. But I ended up with nothing like that piece. But I get the idea. I mean, I think every artist understand this process. So I think that's how I develop. I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that we need to be open to ideas and influences. And so when we're in a gallery or on the internet or whatever, wherever we're getting that information from, there's a part of our creative brain that says, "Oh, that's interesting. I'm going to touch on that little piece," and how it gets integrated into our work might be very different than what it started off with. Yeah. Yeah, very good. Now, talk a little bit more about your relationship between Korea and the Western world. I know that's a big influence, and you've talked a little bit about using some of the letters and so on. Can you just talk a bit more about that influence in your life?
That I have to say, I mean, it's kind of funny. Like I'm saying this right after what I just said, how things just come to you. But this part I have to say, I did look for it because when I first like I say, I was kind of purposely started working on pieces that a lot more decorative and things. And I did actually have this moment of a little bit of period going, what can I do? What can I do to make it look different than other pieces, other people's work out there? And what can I start with telling the story about me and myself? And I think it was kind of obvious that Korea came to me. I mean, I did grow up there. I actually my family still all live there as well. So I don't get there often as I want to, but I am heavily influenced by that culture. So, it was kind of natural for me to start looking at patterns. I always into I still like I that's one book I still do buy quite a bit, like pattern books, not only just Korean. I like patterns anyway, so I don't use as much as pattern as I like to in my work, because I don't want it to be too over like, this word I'm looking for. Like, I don't want to be too much too with a two different direction, too many directions. So I don't use as much, but even patterns, I purposely look for like a palace wall and then like tiles and stuff like that to pick things that what I can use on my piece and that it will look good in my piece. So it that definitely I did look and researched it for a while. I mean, the Hangul part, the writing part kind of came to me, but before that it was definitely I was tried to kind of merge between something Korean to what I experienced in West, like other things that I like. It's kind of funny, like one thing I use in some of my boxes is because Korea has this wooden door panels that even my grandmother used to have. Like it's kind of it's it, you think about it, it's a little bit funny and ridiculous, but Korea actually has a door with wood frame with a thin wood frame with a paper,
Oh,
although they
really?
guess like a minus 20 Celsius, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, there's a heated floor and things, so they keep them warm, but it's they don't have a fully wooden door. It has a wooden frame. But if you ever get a chance to like Google it, it's actually really beautiful. The pattern's really gorgeous. And I actually use that patterns on some of my boxes. And then funny thing is, was I in Belgium? And one of like those art deco decoration was very similar to it. Isn't that funny? It's so far away in different era too. But so I find that like it kind of gave me a chill a little bit. It was very interesting. It's like, that looks just like my box. But I didn't, that wasn't my referral. That was I was trying to get the Korean door, but anyway, so I there's a still like I'm trying to make that connection, but sometimes the connection is already there in a way. It's interesting. But
Very beautiful. Now, I wonder if you could describe for us a challenge that you had as an artist, what or working with clay or whatever, and how you overcame that challenge.
So I do have things, and I'm still overcoming in a way. So I don't know if I can talk about that, but so as you already saw, my work is like it's not just so I'm trying to how do you put it? I do have a pretty two very distinct style of work that I'm trying to interconnect them, but I'm still having a little bit of hard time doing so. I mean, right now I can't, it's like even to galleries, I have several galleries selling my work, but it's either one gallery picks one item or the other. And so I think just to, I don't want to go really deep into just how art field and all that, but I think everybody expect this certain artist to do one work and one style only, and that's what consider as a kind of high art in a way, it feels like. So definitely that's my struggling a little bit. And trying, I mean, my overcoming is just applying to, because right now I just got accepted to two different competition in Italy, and one is box and one is whales. So I just send them separately and see what happened. And then if one competition send box and they don't accept them, maybe I'm thinking next year I will just send them whales, and see what happened. It's because I just like making them both. So I don't want to give up. I mean, I think they're very distinguishly mine. I don't think it's
Clearly.
I mean, I would like to say it's not like, oh, it looks like something this and that. So I would like to continue, but yeah, definitely I'm still struggling with the perception of others of like you have to be just at one thing.
It's interesting that dilemma of having what's in your heart important, right? So that you are doing the work that really brings you pleasure, that's part of your creative process, and yet at the same time having to deal with external influences like galleries and others who have opinions about how you should do your work. One of the things that I've sort of latched on to that I think makes sense is that galleries want you to be consistent, and so that there's it doesn't have to be the same, but it has to be consistent. And I think your work is very consistent in the sense that if we look at your boxes or your lidded vessels, they do have a consistent look and feel to them, even though the form is different.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thanks for saying that. That's really nice to hear.
Yeah. Now, I'll end off our interview here today with a question we ask about your thoughts about or your advice that you would have for an up-and-coming ceramic artist. What advice would you have for somebody who's, and it doesn't matter about what age they are, as you've noted, it could be any age, but what's some advice you might have for somebody?
Personally, I think I'm actually up and coming out of it's kind of a little bit. But just my own experience. So I'm working in this communal studio with I think we have like up to 100 members or more than that. But so I'm surrounded by people with many of them I experience as much as I am, or more, and or some many hobbyists and a lot of people all in between. And one thing I notice, like people wants to have their style, like they wanted to work towards that and kind of name for themselves, and I think every artist struggled with that. I mean, I did too, but I think it's good because that's what I exactly did too, like mimicking other people's work, or like take some part of work to yours and try to create something. And I think that's really, really great. And I think everybody has to mimic other artists too at the beginning to see what you like, what you can put. I mean, because there's nothing really original anymore. It's like someone done it before. But so what I'm getting at is I would like to, like, if I was telling a couple of my friends at the studio, I would say, like, be patient and continue with the some pieces, like some direction you were going, continue with that direction a little bit longer. Like I noted, because we're bombarded with there's so many ideas and so many things out there, I noticed people just make one thing and then like, oh yeah, I like it, but I want to go to do something else. So I will see some people for years and they will just jump from this to that and that to that, and then it just like nothing come out of it. Does it make sense?
Totally. It makes perfect sense with me because I can relate to that personally, as I can get I always think I have idea ADHD. I can get interested in so many different things, right? And I'll see something, go, oh, that would be fun to do that. And I've had to learn to not do that, to put that impulse away and stick with something, to make a series of things as opposed to one.
Exactly. Yes.
But I like your advice about being patient, but also
Focus.
focus. So there's the two, right, that have to go hand in hand.
Yes. Yeah, that's that I think that would be one advice, definitely, because I really see so many people. Some people actually I see their work and go, oh, she got it. Like that's something great, something new, something I haven't seen anywhere else. She got it, but she's already tired of it.
Yes.
And then moving to something else, I'm like, no, you have to focus, make some more, and then go from there to like you really make yours. You can just make yours by making 3 pieces to 5 pieces, just can. And then if I say one more thing is probably, I mean, use a social network a lot more, because I think a lot of artists are not really getting onto it. I mean, personally, I did get a lot of advantage from being on Instagram for sure, because got a lot of business opportunities and gallery connections, and I definitely advanced my career a lot farther with being on, and it's free. I mean, definitely you need to invest your time, but
Yeah. Very good. Mie, this has been wonderful having a conversation with you today. We really appreciate you spending your time with us, and I'm sure our audience will love to hear your story and be inspired by some of your work. And of course, we'll put up links to your Instagram and website on our material so that people can find you in your work. So thank you so much for being with us
thank
today.
you. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.